Welcome to the Note to Scene podcast. I'm Matt Crane.
I'm Tyler Sharp.
And every week we chronicle the biggest news in the music scene. Find more episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, where you should please rate and review us. Email us at notetoscene@gmail.com. We have a lot to talk about this week. Big news from Blink-182 and Riot Fest. But first, we're going to talk about the 1975, who are back with a big song and a big move. Let's go. Did you see that the main were banned from Twitter?
I did, dude. What the hell happened?
It's pretty funny. I saw someone tweet, like, I can't believe I have more followers than the main do.
Oh,
and, like, they
retweeted
it. They lost all of their followers.
You want to break it down, or?
I mean, not really. I just think it's savage as fuck that Twitter did that to them.
I guess they sent them a notification, be like, yo, put your birthday in. And yeah. They put it in, and they put it as the day that their band formed, or the year that their band formed, or whatever. And that makes them 11 years old, and you're not allowed to have a social media account if you're under the age of 13. And Twitter's been cracking down on it ever since the Lil Tay drama and, you know, all that stuff.
Fucking Lil Tay ruining everything for everyone.
Lil
Tay. God damn it, Lil
Tay. Ruining scene bands' futures.
You know, we backed that baby, but I don't think we can back Lil Tay.
Dude, that's a whole nother podcast, man.
That's a whole other, like, podcast series. Yeah, that's just savage from a branding perspective, losing all of your followers. Like, they're not Kanye West. They can't delete their Twitter and then have 30 million followers, you know, when they reactivate it. That's rough.
Right. But from what I understand, they're getting them all back slowly.
In
like waves. I think that's what's going to happen. But yeah, what a random ass story, man. Just as the scene convulses on its way
Let's start taking out their Twitter accounts too.
Right,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do a listener question. This one comes in from listener Daniel, who writes into notescene@gmail.com. Daniel says, hey guys, love the show. I never get tired of hearing that. Please keep saying that.
Absolutely.
I'm a 29-year-old emo kid. I was wondering if you guys were fans of Ryan Ross and John Walker's short-lived side project, The Young Veins. Do you think that either of those two guys regret leaving Panic? I know it was the Brendan Urie show. It's the Brendan Urie show now. But at one point, Ryan was the man in Panic at the Disco who wrote the music and the lyrics. My first reaction to this question is, who the fuck is John Walker? Like, holy shit. Like, I was like, John Walker, Obi-Wan Kenobi, John Walker.
Right.
That is a name I have not heard since all before you were born. Like,
right.
That was a dude. Holy shit.
Throwing it back.
Where's
to 05,
John Walker, man?
Yeah, this is interesting because we got we mentioned the Young Veins the last episode when we were talking about
but
Ryan.
John Ross. Walker, like, is he still a guy?
Is he still alive?
Is he a guy? I just, like, that was a dude.
I don't know what rock he crawled under.
Yeah, so
he's a normie now.
Yeah, totally. But to answer Daniel's question about what I, you know, if I was a fan of this, we were fans of this project. For me, no, I fucking hated this project. To me, this project was like if you took the Pretty Odd Poison and Panic, it was all sucked out, and then that poison, that Pretty Odd Poison, made and formed its own band. That's what the Young Veins were to me. I hated this band. How about you, T-Sharp?
Yeah, it was a continuation of a bad era from Panic at the Disco. Pretty Odd was a letdown, and then we got even further let down. but I do like what he said about Ryan Ross. Ryan Ross was the dude, man. Like, remember when... This was one of my favorite stories you ever ran at Alternative Press. When One Direction kicked out Zayn, and someone went on their Wikipedia page and added Ryan Ross as the official new member of One Direction, and you ran a story with that headline. I was in class at the time. I burst out laughing, man.
we ran it with this angle of, like, because somebody had edited the One Direction Wikipedia and just dropped Ryan Ross in the members section. So we wrote it with this angle that person who messed with the Wikipedia was just the Dark Knight's Joker, who just wanted to watch the world burn, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, what chaos to cause. Chaos all day. That was the number one story on our site for, like, 3 days.
It was massive, man. It was massive. That was perfect.
Everyone was, all those 1D fans were like, who is Ryan Ross?
What's a Ryan Ross?
So much fun.
Good times. But yeah, I mean, like we said last episode, Ryan Ross was, he was big for Panic, you know? He was a personality, but this shit, Young Veins flopped hard, man.
Totally. Couldn't agree more, Tyler Sharp. Yep. We thank Daniel for writing in. If you have any questions, feel free to send them in to notescene@gmail.com. But Tyler Sharp, holy shit, man, we got to move on. We have a lot to talk about this week.
There's been a lot going on in the scene lately.
Definitely. So let's get right into it. The 1975 are back. They released their new single, Give Yourself a Try, and announced their third LP, A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack here, Tyler, with this band and this song and everything surrounding it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we should just, let's just start with the song. Tyler, tick, 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 start. How much time you got, man? And what did you think of the new 1975 song?
So this is a big evolution for the band. It doesn't have their kind of bouncy riffs that they've been known for over their last two records. It's got a very kind of, I have in my notes, like, light industrial feel. When you say industrial, you kind of think industrial rock, this heavy kind of mechanical vibe. But this is almost,
I see what,
like,
you mean, though.
It's very, like, light techno almost, but it still has more edge than techno has or had back in the 2000s. Shouts to techno. But it's really weird, man. I really love this song. And I wasn't expecting to, because I was not a fan of the last 1975 record at all. I was really let down by it. I felt like they didn't deliver on the hype from their first record. You know, it had the smashes like Chocolate, Sex, Girls. Those songs are pretty undeniable. And I felt like the last record didn't have anything that really jumped out and could really propel the band. But surprisingly, it really kind of maintained their stature in the music industry. And then they come back with this total kind of, not a total rebrand on this song, but, you know, they have the aesthetic change, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, like, these verses, he kind of cooks. He's got a nice flow. I love the vocal melody. The chorus is a little redundant after a while, but I think it serves the song well. And that's what I always say, like, to musicians, serve the song. Don't be going out of your ass to do different things. And there's a lot of lyrics in here that I really, like, gravitated towards.
We'll go through them.
One that I'll just point out right now, I found a gray hair in one of my zoots. Like, context in the modern debate, I just took it out. Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Man, just dropping.
That's a killer one, did I say?
Dropping the fire, Maddie. Oh, my gosh. But I'm a big fan of this song. I was not expecting to be. I think it has a very, in a weird sense, a very booming kind of busy feel to it. There's a lot going on in the background instrumentally. And I think Maddie's voice is just very smooth. And there's a good dichotomy there. It's not jarring, but it feels important. So
what is your score on this song, Tyler Sharp?
I'm at an 8 out of 10, man.
Oh, Banger Nation.
We are here. Sound banger the siren, status. Man. Sound the siren.
I felt a way about this song, man.
All right.
I felt a way about this video.
Hell yeah.
I feel a way about this band, man.
Appreciate
dude,
it,
I felt a way, Tyler Sharp. So first off, the guitar. Oh, right. My God. You have this, like, shrieking, distorted, banshee guitar riff that's set on a loop, and it's emotive, it's nostalgic and romantic and defeating. This guitar riff is the frosting on top of the frosting on top of the cake. It's the frosting on top of the lesser frosting.
Holy shit.
Oh my God. That guitar riff has a bite that pierces your soul. You must listen to this song. Just to hear that guitar riff, at least. You know, Matt Healy described this song as quote, faded splendor. And I don't know why, but that just sounds perfect. Like, it's
pretty accurate.
It just fits. You know, vocally, Healy is vulnerable and flamboyant on this song, but also like touching and rich. Not very showy. You know, there's no more 80s pop flash here
Thank
like we had
God.
in the last record. Back to rock. And, you know, rock is dying. You know, we always talk about it. It's the end of rock. Rock's over. Every week there's a new article about how rock music is fading away. But the 1975, man, like, they make me think, like, this rock and roll thing, like, there might be something left here. You know, we might be able to do rock still. And I saw a comment on some forum where some dude just said, I'm going to play that riff nonstop at a guitar center. And just the idea of somebody obnoxiously shrieking that riff at a guitar center, you know, just as loud as can be, that just cracked me up and brought joy to my heart. You know, I never do this, but I'm giving this song a 9 out of 10.
Holy shit, man. Is that like the highest rating you've ever given on the show? This is like your song of the year, man.
I think the only other 9 I've ever given was to Science Fiction.
Okay. All right. All right.
So yeah, 9
Holy
out of 10.
Shit,
this is a
man.
Great song.
You like this more than I do. I think you want to have sex with that guitar riff or something.
A little bit, man. Dude, this video. So you must watch the video.
Oh, let's talk about the video, man.
Yeah, let's talk about the video and we'll get some lyrics. We're going to go through everything, Tyler.
Cool.
He's Gerard Way and Hayley Williams combined into one, and also the voice of the millennial generation. Like, this video is great. I think it'll be iconic. Like, what did you think of the video?
I was all about it, man. I love his... We got to talk about Maddie's pants, man. The flood has arrived, dude. The pants. But he pulls it off. Like, he's never make flooding... Flooding pants have never looked better than they do on Maddie. I can't get over it. And then, of course, the hair. And can we talk about the guy liner? I mean, holy shit, he looks like he walked right out of 2006, man.
The bassist is guy lining it up too.
Right?
He's not the only one doing it. They're bringing guy liner back.
Right, absolutely. His dance moves, the way he acted in the video, it didn't feel unnatural, you know, as opposed to a certain other front woman who released an album last year that makes me feel uncomfortable.
Careful.
Right? Yeah. Okay. It felt natural. Like, this felt like, this just felt like him. It didn't feel forced at all. The get up, the look, it fits
the look
well,
is just,
dude.
It's like, I mean, the hair. Did you see? I mean, he's obviously been getting a lot of shit about looking like Hayley Williams. Did you see Hayley Williams go to bat for him on Twitter?
But she kind of, like, I did.
She said, y'all need to leave him alone. And then she tried to sell some hair dye, you know, which is, that's what she's going to do.
I don't have anything wrong with the plug.
And then Matt Healy called Hayley an emo icon and thanked her for defending him.
But let fans be fans, right? I don't think, it's not bad that we're comparing him to Hayley Williams, right? Because of the hair, you know?
No, yeah, I think it's a great thing.
I didn't like the first part of Hayley's tweet. That's what I'm trying to say. I thought it's just like, Hayley, let the fans be. Like, why can't we just be?
I think she was just excited about the song and wanted to be a part of the moment, you know?
And that's I don't know. It came off I think so, but...
You don't mind having Hayley Williams chiming in on your shit. You
know,
if you're Matt Healy,
Right, and he knows. But just the way she, you know, she started the tweet all lowercase LOL. It's just like, come on, Hayley. Oh, okay, we gotta move on. I can't talk about it anymore.
Yeah, so this song, man, and you tell me your interpretation. My interpretation, and I've also heard the band kind of talk about it, you know, it's like a critique about being a millennial and also about being okay with being a millennial. Like, it's sort of ensuring. There's an anxiety to this song, and I feel it. Like, I feel away, man. Like, I'm jittery, but I'm loving it. The song, it ends up not really resolving itself or that anxiety, and it's kind of defeating. It's an imperfect song, but that's what makes it good.
Absolutely.
The New York Times, of course, put this better than I can. They said, the verses hold regrets and self-criticism countered by the encouraging chorus. And that's ultimately this song. I mean, this song makes me not feel good about myself or my generation, but at least I feel something other than numb, which is what rock music makes me feel now all the time.
Right. To get away from the lyrics for a second, I don't know if I'd call this rock. It's like industrial Britpop to me. You know, I know that it's got that really jarring riff to it, but, like, you know, it's still got those kind of, like, 808 drums to it, and, like, your average rock fan now is gonna absolutely hate this.
That's the biggest thing. This is where rock needs to go, though. That's the thing. This is the future of rock.
I don't know. Okay, all right, hold on. I don't know if it's the future. Like, you put this in front of a Five Finger Death Punch fan, and they're, like, tossing it out the fucking window, man. Like, they don't want anything to do with this. But
millennial Snapchat generation, like, totally. If they're going to hook onto rock, which they don't, this is something I think they can hook onto. Whereas they can't hook on Five Finger Death Punch.
Right.
This can't be the new rock they can hook onto.
I totally agree there. So you want to dive into some of these lyrics real quick?
So, yeah, real quick, though, before we do, I want to say, forget about My Chemical Romance coming back.
Dude, forget it. Holy forget shit, it.
This
man. Band,
this can be the rock band that leads us. We don't need Gerard to lead us anymore.
If we can all just fucking agree
that they're going to be the ones, we can make this happen. They can lead. They can bring it back. I don't know, though.
Oh my god, dude. I am not prepared for you to step up to the plate this hard for the 1975. I have never, I don't know of any other band you've batted this hard for.
I've been a fan for a long time, and
it was hard to not be a fan of that first record, but, like, weren't you disappointed by the last one a little bit?
I was a little bit, and we can get into that later after we go through the lyrics here. Okay. Let's just go through some lines. I'm going to start. When your vinyl in your coffee collection is a sign of the times, you're getting spiritually enlightened at 29. Holy shit there. Like, that, as far as critiquing the millennial generation, like, what I took away from that, you know, we live in a time, like, vinyl and coffee collections are things. You know what I mean? It's just an absurd millennial thing. Vinyls used to just be the way the masses listen to music. Coffee used to be a middle working class shitty drink that was a means to an end, you know, but millennials, we've turned them into these, like, prestige items.
Trendy.
And it's like pulling that out, and you're spiritually enlightened at 29. You know, it's kind of just, we think we're such great thinkers as this generation. And I also wonder, and I gotta ask you, sign of the time, you know, is a sign of the time. Sign of the time, is that not a jab or a shot, but, like, is it a light nudge at Harry Styles? Because he kind of embodies that, you know, that fake coolness, like, you know, the way they're trying to revive him as this fake
70s rocker.
Sign of the time. Is that a shot? Like,
I mean, I wouldn't doubt it, you know, the UK homies.
What's one of your favorites, T-Sharp?
Definitely my favorite of the whole song is I Found a Gray Hair in One of My Zoots. Like, a context in a modern debate, I just took it out. Because, I mean, that's just what we do now. You know, there's no context around fucking anything. And it's very difficult to have educated modern debates about anything, dude.
It's difficult to disagree with anyone about anything before it turns into straight savagery.
Right. Like, you can't be friends if you're going to disagree.
Oh, yeah.
So totally. I heard that line when first time through the song, and I was like, holy shit, that's it. Like,
yeah. You know, I mean, like in a post-Trump world, that's how it is, you know?
Totally.
All debates remove context.
And the other one is later on in that verse, another line down, where he just says, and getting STDs at 27 really isn't the vibe.
Let me drop a bomb on that, T-Sharp. Let me drop a bomb on that.
All right, you got the T?
And getting STDs at 27 isn't the vibe. To me, this is a side hand to, and this is just how I take it, to the whole Tinder hookup dating generation that we have become.
Okay.
That is kind of shameful. Like, this just Tinder one night stand bullshit that we've all kind of participated in, our whole millennial generation. And I think that's him just kind of rolling his eyes at that, you know, and getting STDs at 27 isn't the vibe. This shouldn't be what we're about, yo. Let's start getting real relationships again.
Right? Yeah, let's take it back.
So that's what I took. It just hit me like fire. What did you think?
I couldn't get over the fact that he chose 27. Like, wouldn't getting an STD at any age be isn't a vibe?
Yeah.
But it really is just like hot take commentary on the world today of the youth generation of millennials.
He's just scorching his own generation, but then saying it's okay. Give yourself a try. It's such a bizarre lyrical approach. Another line I just fucking adored. It's a little bit longer. and you'll make a lot of money, and it's funny because you'll move somewhere sunny and get addicted to drugs and spend obscene amounts on fucking seeds and beans online. Seeds and beans, he means pills and weed. And that's kind of, you know, you'll get rich, you move somewhere nice like LA, but then you just end up fucking buying pills and weed online. You know, that's kind of, he's admitted to being a drug addict, a former drug addict. He says he's fine now. And that, I think that's kind of his autobiographical line is, you know, he got a lot of money, got into drugs.
Totally.
And I think totally cool of him to put it in the song like that. Like, it's almost like turning the mirror back on himself, not just the generation, but me. Hey, me. Look at me.
Right. There's so many hot takes. I mean, the only apparatus required for happiness is your pain and fucking going outside. Sure. Like,
right?
Holy shit.
So I look back to the beginning, and this is the most manufactured assembly line band ever put together. I remember getting promos from Interscope Records before anyone even knew like who this band were.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that? Like, do you remember Universal? Did you ever have Universal Music's advanced record system?
I didn't.
So inside baseball for listeners, when you're like a music journalist, record labels will send you advanced copies of a band's record. And usually it's through a program like Holix, which is really good, where you get them all on one sort of internal secret streaming service that you can listen to. But Universal Music had their own Universal program, and it was kind of janky, but I just remember them just bombing me with those 1975. And I was like, who are these guys? And at the same time, that band, The Neighborhood, were blowing up. And I was like, I kept getting the two bands confused. But this was, to me, I always saw through this, and I saw it as the boy band invasion. Like, to me, in the beginning, they were trying to bring boy bands back. And you had them all at the same time. You had One Direction, the rock boy band, 5 Seconds of Summer, the punk boy band, and then you had the 1975, the indie boy band.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is what they were. They were the fucking indie boy band, and that's why they didn't get any respect from, like, Pitchfork or the critic, you know, the critical blogs in the early days. But unlike those other bands, the 1975 worked out and evolved into something more than just an indie boy band. So, you know, that debut self-titled album comes, and I don't use the term instant classic lightly, but it kind of is, right?
I mean, there's a lot of filler on that record, and it's not perfect by far, but when it hits, they've never hit it better, you know? Unless for you, it's they've hit it better on this song, but...
I mean, it's... Is this, it's good.
Is this
it's
up
its own
there?
Thing. It's separate. Yeah, I mean, this is, to me, like I said, when this album came out, these songs, to me, they sounded like they had existed for 50 years. You know, they were just that good. I was like, this song's obviously been out for 20 years. I know this. When I heard this song, I felt like I had known it already for my whole life. You know, when I heard Chocolate, when I heard Girls, I was like, oh, that's like some British band from the 70s, right? You know?
Totally.
And yeah, Sex, great song. Dude, the Robbers video is amazing. Have you ever watched that music video?
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Oh my God. You know, like, almost brings a tear to your eye. And it even plays on the Bonnie and Clyde trope, which I fucking hate. But
mm-hmm.
That is a great music video. Just that era of the band was so great. And Maddie, like, truly became a style icon. Like,
totally.
He serious, dude, there were a lot of people who wanted to look
so
like him.
So many,
like,
dudes were trying to pull off that hair, man.
It was like kind of the next Sonny Moore. Remember how every
holy
scene kid
shit.
Wanted to look like Sonny?
Yep.
Every hipster music industry bro wanted to look like Matt Healy.
Mm-hmm. So does this song live up to those three hits off that first record for you?
For me, yeah, it does.
It like it goes toe-to-toe, or is it better?
To me, it's toe-to-toe with Chocolate.
Holy
and Girls.
Shit,
it's
man.
It's probably better than Sex.
Wow.
No pun intended.
Wow.
I'd say better than Sex, on par with Chocolate and Girls.
I mean, I've added it to my banger playlist, but I need some time with it, man. Like, I really like this song, but I need a summer with it. I'm excited for this record, man.
Dude, me too. Okay, so during this time too, Maddie also quote dated T Swift. Remember that? Like,
dude, I
the
remember
rumors
the story.
Were going around. Like,
I remember running.
And
the
what's
story
funny
on
is he didn't really date her, and everybody in the industry knew that. What Taylor Swift is, it's like this business she has where, like, this is all my theory, but a record label can pay Taylor Swift a fuck ton of money to say so that you they can start a rumor that their singer is dating Taylor. Mm-hmm. And if Taylor gets this checked, she will not deny that she's dating the person. She will not say she's dating the person, but she won't deny it for a set period of time, like 6 months, which is what happened here.
Mm-hmm.
T-Swift was totally paid off. She never dated Matt Healy. And that's how this went down, in my opinion.
Matt coming in it's with absurd. The fire that's, take, man.
That's why she's dated so many male singers. It makes, you know, if you need your singer to look really fucking cool for 6 months during the album cycle, you have him linked up with T-Swift. You know, we know how the music industry works behind the curtain. It's all a setup.
It's all fake. Nothing is real.
You think Halsey and G-Eazy actually like each other?
Holy shit. I just had a long conversation with that with a friend off the show. Oh my God, man. We can't go there right now. But yeah, man, nothing matters. No one exists on purpose. Come watch TV with me.
Absolutely. Shouts to Rick and Morty. I like it when you sleep comes out. Love Me, terrible first single.
Awful.
Holy shit.
Awful.
Disco pop Duran Duran ripoff. It was
just bad.
It was pretty jarring, and I was pretty coming off that self-titled record, where you know they definitely felt sort of how 21 Pilots felt around Blurry Face, like we're like this is they're the biggest band now, you know, and they're gonna be huge. I was a little disappointed by that. But at the same time, I thought the visuals for that album tease were just amazing and groundbreaking. The use of the pink neon everywhere and the neon signs everywhere. Holy shit. Like, the visual tease to that album was fire.
It was good. They had the aesthetic down, man. I remember running all those stories on Alternative Press. And, like, I was into the singles from this band. But I was excited for the next record. I was excited to witness it because I didn't witness the rollout of the first album. I was a bit behind on the 1975. But I remember because I was trying to lock down a premiere on Alternative Press for this record, and I was on email chains for like 4 months with people on their team, and I was dude, trying so hard. And we never ended up getting it, but...
I remember when I was there, we were trying to get them on the cover. And,
right?
I think they were like, nah, we're going with the fader or something. I was like, God, they were just blowing up.
Yep. All those singles came out, and it was just disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. Well, From my perspective,
Love Me was so terrible that when exclamation point came out, it was a bit of a relief, I think, for fans too, because it blended that 80s pop with sort of their older style.
A little bit.
Sounded more like the 1975 again. And then The Sound came out, which I know you don't like that song.
Mm-hmm.
I like that song. But that was their biggest U.S. radio hit. I mean, it was in constant rotation, and mm-hmm. it was necessary for the band to sort of take that next step as a musical act, I think. And I think The Sound is an achievement. You know what I mean?
It's the reason why they were able to come back and do this on the level that they're doing it.
Yeah. That song was everywhere.
It really saved that cycle. I think
it was just the solid radio hit that they needed that they had never had.
Right.
And man, the DJs, I don't know, the rock guys, they just couldn't stop spinning it all summer. It was just The Sound, every other song. And then I think Somebody Else, that's a pretty good song. I like that one. I mean, I actually like this record. I mean, to me, the album is more of a mood, like just like the band is kind of more of a mood. Like, the record's like a state of mind. It just puts me in a certain headspace, and I like it for that. You know, the record's probably like a high 7 for me.
Yeah, I'm at like a high 5. It was there was just so much filler for me. My favorite song off of it is She's American. I feel like that's
one.
Very self-titled, kind of.
Yeah, totally. Oh, that intro? Totally.
Right, that riff.
That intro goes off the shows, too.
I know. They
intro that song. But this album sold 100,000 copies first week.
Yep.
I mean, that was it. I mean, this is like, here they are, you know, they're not, you know, Paramore selling 50,000 copies. They're one of the big boys now, you know, and this record went gold. So did self-titled. So they have two gold records under their belt, you know, gold meaning 500,000 copies. So all that said, I am really freaking excited for this new album.
There's just so much to talk about. We have the aesthetic change, and the fact that the music is actually good is, and it provides so much commentary to unpack.
Isn't it great when music is good? Like, right. And also, isn't it great when a rock band, like a band, does something new that you've never heard before? Like, you can't compare this song to any other song.
It's
like,
tough.
Oh my God, surprise us. Holy shit. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
All these bands who put out the same fucking song every time. It's like, you know,
I know.
All right, I gotta stop sucking this band's
dude.
Dick.
But, you know, like,
so, all right, on that note, I'm gonna say I'm a little concerned about the numbers. This YouTube video is still under 1 million views. Last time I checked. Oh, they're only at 1.7 million on Spotify. And I'm kind of wondering, like, are people over it? Are people over the 1975? Are they as big of a deal as they were, you know, peak this tease? You know, and did they burn too many fans with the last album? Did Love Me, you know, just scar too many people?
I'm not sure if it was the last record because it ended up writing well enough to get them to where they're at now. I'm almost wondering if it was the gap. Because the 1975 were teasing, like in January, I think it was. And then they just dropped a live record. And I feel like that, from what I understand, a lot of fans felt burned by that. A lot of fans love that live record now, like the diehards absolutely ride for it. But we were all, when they were teasing back then, we were all expecting the new single. And then all they did was just come out and drop a live album.
Right.
And then, you know, here we are, what, 5 months later, and now we're just getting new music. I almost wonder if the gap was too long and they were out of the conversation for too long. Because they've been teasing, but it's all been within their 1975 bubble. They haven't had any, like, breakout, like, news stories outside of the general cycle that they always get.
And there was so much fucking teasing with the last record that I just felt tease fatigue.
Right.
Like, I just didn't care. Stop teasing. You know, like, they over-teased.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, they teased. So if you're going to tease that much on your last record, your new record, you need to just surprise drop it or something. Okay. First week predictions, Tyler, for the new record.
Man.
When it comes out.
Man. We're doing these this early, huh?
It's early.
Man.
You want me to go first?
It's tough.
I can go first.
Yeah, you go first and let me think about it.
Okay. So I'm thinking 78,000 copies first week. I think they're going to take a little bit of a hit for reasons you just described.
I'm thinking that the hit might be more than that, man.
Okay.
I'm going to say 55.
Ooh. Oh, no.
This is good. I don't know if there's a spot for this song on radio.
Definitely. I totally see that point. Okay, well, I hope your prediction doesn't come true. Okay, so we have spent a lot of time on the 1975. Let's move on to our next story. NoFX got canceled this week. While playing Vegas, they joked about the Vegas shooting, and Fat Mike said of the Vegas shooting victims, at least they were country fans and not punk fans. That's a quote. Terrible, disgusting, tasteless. What else do you say about this, Tyler Sharp?
And trigger warning to any NoFX fans out there, I am surprised it has taken this long for this band to get canceled. This band has kind of made their career off being offensive, as many kind of crude punk bands have. But NoFX like to take it and really pump the gas when it comes to being offensive. And regardless of all the parties involved and whoever was there and whoever witnessed it, this band had a hand in creating some inner turmoil within my favorite band, Under Oath.
How the fuck did I know you were gonna bring this up, and how the fuck did I have it in my notes to ask you about it, because I want to know Under Oath's reaction.
So yeah, I mean you know, they're not gonna say anything, but they've brought it up in recent interviews. I've heard
Tyler Sharp, I think you have to recuse yourself from this story.
I'm biased against NoFX.
The backstory for those who don't know is that NoFX came at Under Oath hard on, I want to say it was Warped 06.
Yep, it was NoFX, month leading up to Define the Great Lines release.
Yeah, NoFX, Fat Mike made fun of Under Oath every day on stage. It was actually pretty funny back then. You know, Under Oath, the band, they didn't like it. And
They didn't like it so much that they've come out and said now that they didn't drop off the tour and break up behind the scenes because of Fat Mike. But
he was an antagonist motherfucker. He was look at me. Like, he was going after From First to Last, my favorite band. He was going after them too that same year.
All the emo bands. All the emo bands. And he went after Under Oath pretty purely for their Christian beliefs at that point. But
it was weird seeing NoFX make national headlines though. Like, it was just weird, like, seeing them, you know, on CNN and shit. That was just
break onto CNN?
Dude, it was everywhere, bro. Like, Fox News, like, this story went everywhere. And I guess, you know, the band lost endorsements, which They had apparently.
They had a beer endorsement that they lost. Yeah. They got kicked off their own festival.
They've apologized, but you know, to me, it's just stupid drunk Fat Mike. I've never taken him seriously. I don't think his fans are gonna give a shit about this. You know, old punks. This is that generation that likes making people upset. Pre-blinked Warp Tour, you know, Lagwagon, No Use for a Name, Kevin Lyman Core, that era of punk, like, that was a different spirit, and that spirit was fuck you. You know, that was the idea back then, was fuck you. Like, that was what punk was about. It was about upsetting people back then, or at least that group of punk. And that's all this is. This is an older generation aging out here. And now it's tasteless and unacceptable, but that's all it is. It's a passing generation. I don't think we have to worry about Fat Mike.
I mean, the band doesn't even tour at this point, you know? Like, this festival was like their first big thing in fucking forever, you know? But yeah, I mean, remember the Dickies last summer? Same era.
I mean, the same generation, right? That's what these punks were about, and they have not, they still live in that era, and their same fans will go to their same show. It's just, it's its own bubble, I guess, at this point. Yeah. Funny joke I saw. I don't know if it was a Hard Times article or just a joke I saw, but it was that they were dropped from Fat Records because of this.
Oh,
like, Fat Mike dropped himself. Oh, that's hilarious.
Gotcha.
Remember when the owner of Rise Records signed himself?
Oh, Defeat the Low? Yeah. I actually like that record somewhat. Is this going to affect NoFX's legacy at all?
No.
I didn't think
not so. Their fans are those people. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
A lot of Mohawks. No shots at Mohawks, but a lot of Mohawks. All right. We got to move on, Tyler, to our next story, which is Blink-182. They began their Vegas residency this week, and during that, they played Adam's song for the first time in 9 years. T-Sharp, did you see any of this?
I saw Adam's song, I saw Feeling This, I saw Damn It, and a couple others, but Adam's song, it was cool to see him play it, for sure. You know, this is the second week in a row we're talking about live Blink performances. I'm lacking in the energy department, man.
Well, you know, it's not that big of a story, but they also played Don't Leave Me, and they played the party song, which I don't know if they've ever played the party song. And that's
okay,
one of my
was
favorites.
That the first one?
So a lot of Enema. They were playing a lot of Enema, which, you know, makes sense during a residency. But, dude, the Adam song, too much emotion for me. I still can't listen to that song. I mean, it's just such a sad song.
That was one of my favorite Blink songs growing up.
I loved it, but I just can't listen to it anymore. You know, as people I've known have died, I can't do it. It's, the song is so tragic. So I really, like, I couldn't even get through the video of them playing it. I don't listen to that song anymore. It just brings you down. But they opened with Feeling This, which, can you imagine, you're just sitting, you know, in that dark fucking theater, and you don't know what they're going to open with, and then you just hear Barker slam on that kit, and as soon as you hear those drums, you know what's coming. Like, you're 12 years old again. Like, I'm 12 again in that moment, you know? What a great song to open with, Feeling This.
And then the lights shoot up, and Barker's going absolutely ham, and then you have two dudes in their 40s standing up on stage not moving.
what a fucking song to open with. You just, the fill, you know it. The first time his drumstick hits the kit, you know what song's coming. It's just such an iconic track. I love it.
I'll catch some flack from this question, but just don't at me. Is that the best Blink song?
It's close. It's top five for sure.
Okay. All right.
I think it's top five for sure. My favorite Blink song is All of This, which is so random, but it's just touching to me, and they didn't play that, so I was disappointed. Okay. But one of my Blink, you know, I thought it was a good performance. They are, you know, one of my top five favorite bands of all time. So it's fun to see. Anything else on Blink, T-Sharp?
No, I hope they up the ante a little bit. I know they're getting up there, but come on. I don't want to be bored watching this band.
All right. Well, I'm going to end that Blink slander, and we're going to move on to our next story. Okay. As They Dying are apparently returning, possibly with the original lineup, after singer Tim Lambesis was released from prison for allegedly hiring a hitman to kill his then wife and mother of his children, Megan. So I gotta say, you know, I'm not like an SJW. I'm not anti-SJW. If that's your thing, go do it. That's great. You know, like, here's me. Like, I like to make my money. I like to eat the food I like. I like to see my friends. and generally I just like to be left the fuck alone. You know, I'm a typical anti-participatory, nihilistic, apathetic millennial, right? Matt Healy fucking hates me as much as he hates himself. But this is where I think I'm going to have to draw the line.
Wow.
Like, he tried to have someone killed. People can't support this shit.
But they are.
I'm not going to be one of them.
You're going to listen, though.
I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm going
to. We have to. We got to talk about it on the show. But
I don't know if I can.
Dude, come on. This was one of your favorite bands of all time.
I know, but this is just too much, man.
It's tough. It's definitely a difficult situation. And I mean, the answer is your response. That's the correct answer, right? We don't support this
yeah,
at all.
I mean, my answer is obviously the correct response. But yeah, it's blurry. It's complicated. And I have a belief. And that belief is everyone deserves a second chance. But here's the thing. Like, no, he's getting a second chance at life, you know, and he's lucky for that. Does he get a second chance at As I Lay Dying? I don't think he deserves that.
I mean, that's up for the fans to decide, right? I mean, he can do whatever he wants because he's, he served the time. He served his sentence. He's out now. And he's going to do what he wants to do within, legal parameters. And there's nothing illegal about creating art after you get out of prison.
Sure. I just, as a longtime As I Lay Dying fan, I was toying with this idea in my head and I was like, I'm going to maybe try to see what I can do to forgive Tim and listen to this. But now I'm just like, when faced with it, I'm just like, no, I'm not about this, and these members who, what fucking hypocrites, like Woven War totally bombed and failed.
That was my next question. Yep.
And Mancino, Josh, Phil, they're all going to come back. Nick Hippa.
Nick.
After what he fucking said about Tim and the condemnation he brought down and the self-righteousness he brought down about Tim to launch Woven War and get headlines. Nick Hippa, if he's really going to be back in this band, that's fucking just so hypocritical.
Got to make some money, man. He's got bills to pay.
Yes, man.
I know. I mean, that's what it comes down to, right? They need to make some money because Woven War just hit the fucking gutter, man. They wrote a radio rock record that was decent, but it didn't really take them anywhere. And then they wrote a metalcore record that no one ever even heard.
Yeah.
So we knew this was coming deep down. I feel like we knew this was coming, right?
Yeah.
Like this was going to happen sooner or later.
Don't you feel like a lot of other bands are totally canceling Gone for way less than attempted murder?
Oh,
and yet we're going to let this guy come back. I'm not going to be a part of it.
We ride and die in the court of public opinion in 2018. And, to an extent, I'm choosing my words carefully here, but, prison mentality kind of applies out here. And there is some sort of, I don't know what it is, but
people,
for whatever reason, in 2018 are more forgiving of someone who allegedly attempted to hire someone to kill his wife than other things that we've seen bands get canceled for.
Other terrible allegations we've seen.
It
doesn't, I mean, fine, but I still, this is just too much for me. And shouts to Brian Storm. That's how I got all my info for this, was from his video. Just quick shouts to B Storm.
I watch all his videos to study for the show. Shouts.
Yeah, this was one of my favorite bands. They were arguably the best metalcore band of all time. One of the biggest, probably the biggest. Shadows of Security was one of my favorite albums, but I'm out. That's all I got to say.
I mean, you're in the right there. You're definitely in the right.
All right. Well, anything else on As I Lay Dying, Tyler Sharp?
I don't think so, man. I'm kind of dreading that song talk.
All right. Let's move on to our pop story, which is none other than Drake versus Pusha T. The rappers have squared off in the best rap beef of our generation. Before we get into this, I'm just going to kind of break down the quick history of this beef, Tyler, so I can get us to a starting point. Okay.
Cool.
So who is Pusha T? Some of you might be wondering. For some of our less, savvy rap fans out there. He started in Clips, but really became sort of an iconic rapper in the early 2010s when he signed to Kanye's label, Good Music. And he kind of came up, even though he was way older than them, he came up as part of that same class of rappers as Big Sean, Kendrick, J. Cole, A$AP Rocky, Wale, Meek Mill, all of them. He's not mainstream, but he's huge in the rap world, and he's highly respected for his lyrical talent and his authenticity. His albums are always an event in the rap world. I think Ice Cube said it best. I think it was Ice Cube who said, he's not the biggest rapper, but he's your favorite rap fan's favorite rapper. And that kind of is Pusha's MO. Pusha has been around for a while and had beef way back with Lil Wayne and Cash Money Records, Lil Wayne's label. And that beef was inherited by Drake when Drake joined Cash Money Records. And there's always been tension there. And Drake took a shot at Pusha on Two Birds, One Stone. And Push, who has been gone for a few years, finally dropped his debut album, Daytona. And it's being hailed as a classic. It got Best New Music on Pitchfork, Nas, Puffy. Every rapper has co-signed this record as being a great one. You know, New York Magazine ran the headline, Pusha T is having a moment again. And they're right. And they ran that before the beef. So that's kind of where we are. And the last track on Daytona, Infrared, he sniped at Drake, calling out Drake's use of ghostwriting and ghostwriters, Quentin Miller in particular, and that whole thing that went down between him and Meek Mill. And so Drake replied within 24 hours with the Duppy freestyle, dissing Push for being old and really also coming at Kanye very hard with disses. And I guess we'll start there, Tyler. That was impressive, the Duppy freestyle.
It was, but I felt like it was over really quick. You know, I especially in the context of Push's response, you know, like Duppy doesn't even matter at this point. You know?
Yeah. I'm just trying to think in that added on world. The talk seemed to be people were impressed with how fast Drake responded.
Yeah, I think I was ultimately disappointed in the song itself. I don't think I've ever actually liked a Drake diss track, even like with the Meek Mill shit. I just kind of felt like those tracks were kind of lackluster, and this
back
definitely
to back
fell into that
top 10 diss track of all time.
I don't know.
So good, dude. Not only was it did it destroy Meek's career, but it was bumped in the clubs all year.
But it didn't. He's 100% uncanceled now. He's back. Meek is back.
That's a whole separate reason why he's back.
Had he not gone
to prison and got the sympathy card, you know.
For sure.
Drake fucking bombed his career.
So it was interesting to see Drake come at both Pusha and Kanye. And I feel like the Kanye wave really boosted this, you know? And I almost feel like when they were writing it, they were like, we gotta incorporate Kanye or else, you know, Drake calling out Pusha, is that really gonna make as big a waves, you know? Drake calls out Pusha and Kanye is bigger than Drake calls out Pusha.
Right. And that was kind of what I felt, though, the inherent flaw in this song. Like, because he was really replying to Pusha. Pusha's who called him out,
sure.
But most of the song was about Kanye.
Exactly.
He was dissing Kanye. And I thought for a second we were about to see a Drake-Kanye nuclear rap war. You know what I mean? That's what I thought was going to happen.
It popped into my head, but Kanye's current mentality, he's not getting into any rap battles anytime soon, man.
True. But just the idea to me of a Kanye Drake rap battle in the history books, like nothing bigger could have happened. So it was just my mind went there. And, you know, we've had rap beefs, band beefs, musical beefs have been around forever and they're exciting. Sometimes they end tragically. Sometimes they just fizzle out, but they can be really exciting. Dude, they've just been Mozart and Salieri,
man.
Back in the day, man.
The OGs.
Dude, composers were fucking, those dudes wanted to shoot each other with crossbows. That was real gangster beef back in the day, Mozart and Salieri. Like, just composers going at it. So my point here is just, you know, rap beef is fun, and I think we can enjoy it. But so, getting to our next part, Pusha responded, you know, not Kanye. Kanye didn't respond, as you said. He's in no place to. Pusha responded with a way better diss track called The Story of Adidon. And Drake got smoked.
Drake's canceled, man.
The
knives, man. They didn't stop coming.
Daggers. And so, like, the big takeaways from this Drake diss track is, first, you got the album artwork, which was Drake in blackface, which was just terrible to see, horrible, and was memed the fuck up all over the internet. I mean, the blackface alone was bad enough, but the other big takeaway from this diss track was that Drake has a secret child with a porn star that he's been hiding and is possibly being a deadbeat dad. And holy shit, man. I mean, just a lot of damage came out of this song.
So, little context for me. I was at a Newfound Glory show when this dropped, which, right? Okay.
As you do.
And Brian Storm texted me. I check my phone in between songs, and all I see is Drake is hiding a child. And I'm like, what? Come again? And then he keeps sending me texts. He's like, Pusha just ended Drake, man. I'm like, what do you God. you mean the number one artist in Spotify worldwide has been ended?
Yeah.
You know, we were entering an era where Drake was untouchable. Dude had totally. 50 million listeners on Spotify worldwide. And
I mean, was he the hip hop artist, but he had also gone against a true rapper, Meek Mill, and totally smoked him and ended his career.
Right.
And Drake, that was the thing, is, you know, Drake, the only chink in Drake's armor was the ghostwriting. And when Meek came at him about it, Drake made sure to set an example to every rapper out there. If
right.
you come at me about my ghostwriting, I'm going to end your fucking career. You know
mm-hmm.
what I mean? So Drake also had that battle rap thing on his side.
The Meek Mill and Drake beef was very interesting. Drake obviously won. Meek has since been uncanceled for outstanding reasons. And now, you know, I feel like after that, Drake really felt like he had his soapbox established. You know, like he had the authority over any rapper that wanted to come at
because,
him.
I mean, what every rapper out there had to seriously think, do I really want, is it worth dissing Drake? You know what I mean? Because it's not. He was going to come at you and end your career.
And
like
that's
he did to
why
me.
I feel like his Kanye call out in the track is him just being overconfident.
Yeah.
You know, like he didn't even think that a full track towards Pusha was worth it in a sense.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's some PR in there, you know, like I talked about before, but it's kind of like, you know, you aren't even worth a full diss track. I'm going to bring in your producer.
He's trying. It's almost like an insult in and of itself.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? He's
by not focusing on him. Yeah.
But you know, Pusha got under his skin. And
oh, absolutely, dude. And we should say beforehand, this is actually a great song, sonically.
Yeah, we're going to go through it. So, reactions. So, first time hearing this song. So, I just want to point out the lyric when I first heard it. You are hiding a child. Let that boy come home. Deadbeat motherfucker playing Border Patrol. I fell out of my chair, dude. And all I saw was red everywhere in the room. I saw flames surrounding me when I heard that line. Oh my God. Even and then the little ooh he drops after that, like he knows the bomb he just dropped. Oh my God, dude. For me, it was just like, wow. It was like that meme of that old lady who fell out of bed, and I was like, you know, when I heard that Pusha T song, oh my God. Like, and then also the other meme that came to mind was it's that one where there's a guy looking like he's being interviewed on local news with a mic up to his mouth, and he looks really concerned, and he's just saying, when I heard that, it was shocking to me. Like, that's what I thought when I heard this fucking verse, man.
Dude.
When I heard that, it was shocking to me. Like, I was just like, oh my God. Torched.
So when I sat down to listen to it, I was with my buddy, and it didn't even, like, it peaked the savage meter so hard for me that it didn't even process when I heard it. I was like, what is he saying? Like, come again? It's kind of like that meme where, I don't know where it was from, but it's the GIF where he's blinking and he's like, huh?
Blinking
huh?
guy. Yeah,
yeah, totally. Yeah, right? And then once I listened to it.
And you're thinking in memes because this battle is going on with memes just everywhere. Like, you know what I mean? The meme has become such a big part of the
Those
rap
are
battle.
The legs, man. Those are the legs that it has to keep running. But I needed a life alert, man. Like, I was about to push that life alert button, man.
Totally. Oh, my God. Totally. Dude, and oh, my God.
It's just, have we ever seen, at any given moment, the world's biggest artist get taken down like this?
Like I said, when I heard that, it was shocking to me. Tyler Sharp. It was shocking.
I'm pretty sure this is unprecedented.
Another line. And he deserves more than an Adidas press run. Love that baby. Respect that girl. Forget she's a porn star. Let her be your world. So the context here, Drake had a clothing line with Adidas coming out that mm-hmm. was going to be named after his son.
Allegedly.
And,
allegedly.
Yeah, allegedly. And this is such an effective diss track, not only because it's a good song, which we'll talk about, but because it did real fucking damage. First off, It destroys Drake's credibility with women, his main audience. Women have really carried Drake. And to know that he's like ashamed of this girl because she's a porn star and he's hiding her. She's the mother of his fucking children. You know what I mean? And he should be loving her and honoring her and, you know, loving this child and not hiding this child. And so Pusha has destroyed Drake's credibility with women. He destroyed a multi-million dollar deal with Adidas. Because when you think of it, who the fuck would ever wear a clothing brand named after this now? You know what I mean? That brand will forever be stained with that image of Drake and blackface. Nobody will ever wear a clothing line by the name of Adidon or whatever it was going to be named. I think it was a similar name. So it did real damage. It also fucked Drake's whole album rollout because now this is all anyone's ever going to be talking about is the Push diss. And the Drake machine, man, before this diss, it was running perfect. Amazing. So well oiled. You got God's Plan and Nice for What.
Nice for What, man? Nice for What.
And it was just like the Drake machine. You could just see it. Oh my God, it was on full firing. Full cylinders, just perfect, and Push just threw this wrench in it, and now it is broken, and it is jammed, and it is grinding.
It has come to a screeching halt, and what was probably what I found most comical out of this whole thing is that the last tweet on Drake's Twitter account before all of this happened, and then while it happened, you know, everyone's going to his account to see if he's posted anything. And it just says, "I'm upset," which was the title of his last song. I'm like, hell yeah, you're upset, man.
Yeah.
No shit. Because he dropped
"I'm Upset" after the Duppy freestyle. He was like, kind of like, man, let's get back to the album. You know what I mean? He thought that was
like, this is over, you know?
He didn't know. It's fucking over. You know?
Oh, he had no idea, man.
A question to me, which is something I wondered, do you think the shot on Infrared was Push laying like a bear trap? You know, was he waiting for Drake to take that bait? Did he think Drake would respond and he had this fire ready? Like he had this missile ready to shoot at Drake? Or do you think it was more organic and he didn't know if Drake would respond and push it really? Because, man, if he came up with all this that quick, you know, wow, what a journalist, you know?
Right, no.
What an investigative motherfucker. Like, he found out all this in this dirt on Drake. I didn't know Drake had a kid. Did you know?
I had no idea.
No, I worked in the music industry and nobody I knew that. You know what I mean? I know it was a rumor around and stuff, but holy shit. Like, this was shocking.
Yeah, I would love to think that they were playing chess in that studio. You know, when they were writing Infrared and they had this in the can and ready to roll as soon as Drake came back, you know? But I don't know for sure. Like you said, if it wasn't, then props to them for digging this up so quick.
Yeah,
they did their homework really fast. It might be more plausible to think that they did this while they were in the studio, but you know,
him and Kanye were up in Wyoming making the album and Daytona.
Wanted to bring up was the fact that Kanye was produced Push's album, and basically
Kanye was very close with Drake for a very long time. So if somebody's going to have a lot of dirt on Drake, you know, it's going to be Kanye.
Right. And basically, Pusha releasing this diss, you know, right after the album drops and all that stuff, it's a Kanye cosign, man.
Totally.
Like, Kanye is backing this song.
Totally. I mean, and Kanye and Drake have kind of been a little there's a little rivalry there, you know, the last few years, as Drake has become number one. You know, there's a natural tension that comes with that for
Kanye. Right, because Kanye wants to be that, you know, and Pablo didn't take off like he thought it would. So,
you know, he's surgical, as he says in the song. You know,
it's going to be a surgical
Drake.
Summer, man.
He's, oh my God, dude, volume one, he says at the end. Like, he's got more dirt, you know, and he's cutting Drake with 1,000 knives. And the other thing, it's actually a good song to me. Like, it feels like a summer jam. Like, I give it an 8 out of 10 as a song alone.
Same. That's where I was at with it, man. I was so impressed with...
That's your score?
Yeah, 8 out of 10. Nice. I was so impressed with not only the homework that was in the legwork that was put into this song, but the beat, man. Like, it's a vibe.
Dude.
Like, this is a good summer song.
He's over that No ID beat, which is, you know, Jay-Z's The Story of OJ beat. And, you know, when I was playing this for some friends, we were all listening to this. Everyone, you know, they were mostly Drake fans, and they were like, I don't like this. You know what I mean? Pusher over that beat, it's scary. Like, it's too confident, you know? When he's coming in over that beat in the beginning, it's just like, oh no, this sounds scary. Push over that beat. So, it's actually a great song. Drake can either You know, he can only respond with a better diss track, or he can tap out. What do you think he should do? I want to preface this by saying, I think no matter what, Drake's going to be okay in the end. Like, if he tapped out now, I think he'd be fine. He'll lose that rap street battle cred. But as far as pop radio goes and being the big, I think he will just continue to be the biggest artist in the world.
Sure.
If he taps out now.
Yeah, I don't...
So that prefaced, I want to ask what you think Drake should do. I mean, what's the move?
What should he do or what I think he's going to do?
Both.
Both? What I think he should do? Yeah, I agree. I think he should move on. I think he should call it a day, you know, drop, kind of 8 Mile it in a way that everyone's telling him to do on a diss track, but 8 Mile mm-hmm. it through the album. Like, mm-hmm. focus on that, because that's going to keep your career going. You know, like, this disc... as savage and as potentially career killing as it is, it will blow over because attention spans are just that short nowadays. But
and Drake is just so big. I mean, we haven't really said it. He's the biggest
artist in the world.
You know what I mean? Yep. He's that guy. And there's a section of the world that probably doesn't even know this is going on. You know
right.
what I mean?
Totally. So now what I want him to do is... I want him to come back guns blazing, but dude, we saw that alleged tweet that Drake has money out. You know, Pusha tweeted
grand.
That Drake has $100,000 out to get info and deets on Pusha to dig up some dirt. And dude, I mean, if that's your homework, like,
Drake's on tilt. He's on tilt here. He's off balance.
This totally...
song would put any man off balance. You just got your shit lit up. You got your $10 million Adidas deal burned up. You know, like, there are probably executives angry about this. You know, it's just the
just
damage.
Completely. Like, he was in the ring. He was going at him. He thought he had gotten a pretty good shot in at Pusha. And then Pusha came back out of nowhere while Drake was almost celebrating at that point.
Yeah.
And, like... Drake's almost knocked out.
Drake
man.
Had Instagrammed the invoice for
right.
Creative
right.
and it was just
Holy
like Drake
shit.
Was like, game over, I won, y'all love me, and now listening to W Freestyle, it's like, oh no, man. You
no.
don't know what's coming. You didn't want this, man. You didn't
dude,
want it.
It really feels like a fucking setup. Like, it really
yeah,
feels
oh,
like
I know,
a fucking total setup.
And that's my whole point about why what I think he should do is tap out and move on. Because like you said, it'd be cool to see him come back guns blazing and light Pusha up. But even if he does, I think Pusha's going to just come back and light him up harder. Pusha wants all that fucking smoke. You know what I mean? He says on the diss track, speaking of Kanye West, how dare you put Ye in my verses? I'm selfish. I want all the curses. He's like one of those guys in a fight who wants to get hit. You know, he wants this battle. He has nothing to lose. He's crazy. You don't, like, Drake doesn't want to get involved in this. You know what I mean? Push is going to take it way further than Drake is willing to. Push has nothing to lose. Drake has a lot to lose. You know?
Yeah,
this is only helping Push and making Push's career bigger while he has an album coming out. Drake has a lot to lose. So I think Drake should tap out.
I mean, I think he should too, but just for the sake of, dude, what a week this was for hip. Like, you want to talk about stories, man. What an exciting time to be a hip hop fan. We used to have this, man. Ronnie Radke was on the run from the fucking law, man. Like, there were times, man. There was times where this was the scene, dude. And now it's cool to see stories and music and things associated with musical artists dominate conversation. I love that.
Ooh, I think Drake needs to put a ring on that girl's finger, take that baby in his arms, you know, make that his album cover. And like, that's, you know, he's gotta, you know, make those amends. One thing I think, it's my idea and it's not gonna happen, but I think it would be great. The music video for this diss track should just be Kanye listening to it for the first time on his iPhone and reacting. That should just be the whole music video. Just Kanye sitting at a desk going, oh, Push.
It's right.
Hilarious.
Yeah, cheers.
I would totally watch that. Just a Kanye reaction video should be the official music video. Because you know when he heard it, his hands were up in the air and he was just like, oh.
Totally. No, It's just been so intriguing and enthralling, man.
Like, everyone I know is texting you, man, like, oh, Push! Like, dude, like, Push! You know, even though Push is older, people have kind of always looked at him like little brother of hip-hop, and it's just like, little Push going in, you know? Like,
dude, it's just the way that they've captivated the entire conversation is just unreal, man. Like, who would have thought Pusha T'd be the guy to end Drake?
He has a chance to be a star of his own. Totally. Like, for the first time.
This
and, like,
is the catapult.
This song, I've always respected Pusha T, and, you know, for being part of the Runaway moment, you know, Kanye's Runaway, I'll always love him for that. I love that verse. And I just have never, his rap is too real for me. And this is kind of another interesting conversation. Rap, you know, it's no secret, I've been into the new rap, you know, all the colored hair, you know, all the emo SoundCloud rap, like, that's what I'm about. And Pusha is more about the classic, he's a classicist, right? You know, it's sure. old school hip hop, and it was just never for me. But this song makes me want to dive into his catalog, which I have started doing. And I actually really like Daytona. I think it's a total jam. And I think he's going to win over a lot of people.
I think he is too. Yeah, I think the album's a big grower. I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of intrigue around the album cover. You know, Whitney Houston's bathroom.
I think it's great.
They dropped about Kanye and his team dropped about 85 G's mm-hmm. on that thing. And Kanye shot his album artwork on his iPhone on the way to his listening party.
That's your label. Kanye's his label. That's a good label to have. You know what I mean?
God, dude, what a time to... Could you imagine being like a hip-hop blogger right now? Yeah, like, you are just rolling in the traffic.
Oh, absolutely.
Things are good right now.
I like the name Daytona. Like, it just sounds like a classic name. It really works well. And I like that picture. Like, you know, it just shows the world that Pusha came from, which was drug dealing. It shows, you know, the splendor and the destruction of that world in one shot. And it's a real shot. And it's a chaotic and disturbing image. And I think it works as the album cover. Okay, so best rap diss tracks of all time. It is pretty well established. Tupac's Hit 'Em Up against Biggie. Nas's Ether against Jay-Z. Jay-Z's The Takeover against Nas. Ice Cube's No Vaseline directed at Eazy-E. And there's a bunch of others you could throw in there. Is this an all-timer for you of hip-hop diss tracks?
I wouldn't put it above any of those. Maybe the Eazy-E one. It's in the conversation. You know, if you have a Mount Rushmore mm-hmm. of hip hop diss tracks or like a top 10, I'd put this in the top 10 all time. Okay. For sure.
I'm going to throw it in like the top 7 because you know, while those diss tracks are iconic, it was a lot of just like name calling. And I mean, obviously the Tupac Biggie one's bad because that ended tragically with, mm-hmm. you know, both of their deaths eventually. Right. But like, you think of Nas and Jay-Z, that was just a lot of them just fucking trading jabs. But this song to me is a better diss track because the real damage it did. Like I said, it fucked up an album rollout. Yeah. It messed up a clothing line and it messed up an artist's relationship with women. You know what I mean? And I think it's so effective. So that's where I am with it.
Nice for what, man? Nice for what?
All right. Well, that is it for the show this week, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you have any questions for us, send them in to noteseen@gmail.com and we will talk about them on the show. Until then, see you next week.